It's 9 p.m. in the East, 8 p.m. in the Central United States, 7 o'clock in the mountains. At KSAV, it's 6 p.m.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good evening, and we welcome you once again to Talking Twilight Zone on KSAV with the experts Kitty and Bobby and Ken. To kick off tonight's program, here's your host, Bobby Neer. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Dan. Thank you very much. Here's a question for everybody. What does a retail store, say a place like Walmart, do when they are stuck with a product that nobody seems to like and isn't selling very well? Of course, they lower the price and eventually have a clearance sale, sometimes giving away two for the price of one just to get rid of it. So here on Talking Twilight Zone this evening, that's exactly what we are doing. It's our first ever clearance sale, as we dispense of two episodes from early in the series that most people, but not all of them, but most, can live without. That's right, it's Bargain Night, and you get two reviews in one. We will start out with episode number 3. A scintillating Western drama called Mr. Denton on Doomsday in our first half. Kitty will do a summary, and she also has two emails to read from Lynn Carpenter, one of our most ardent and faithful listeners and posters at our Yahoo discussion group. Then Ken will tell the world just how much he loves this episode, and we'll do the same thing in the second half with another all-time winner, The 16mm Shrine. So Ken and I are all cranked up to do a lot of complaining, so let's begin. Kitty?
Okay, well, Mr. Denton on Doomsday is the first episode that we get to see where it is set in the Old West. And we see a man who is outside of a saloon, and he's apparently very, very down on his luck, as it appears, because he doesn't have the money to buy booze. So basically the town bullies are always taunting him and telling him that they'll buy him drinks if he just sings for them. And so he does. And then they give him the booze. And it's really a very pitiful sight, you know, to see this man. And along comes a peddler who sees him. And there's also a saloon woman in this who also takes pity on Mr. Denton. That's his name. And we find out that Mr. Denton was at one time a gunslinger. And then somebody came into town. Apparently he shot one person too many. It was a young man that he killed. And he pretty much hung it up at that point. But then things change. And you're going to help me out here, Bob, because I cannot remember what it is the peddler gave him.
What did he give him? It was some sort of potion, wasn't it, Ken?
That's right. Yes. Okay. It was a potion.
Yeah.
It was a potion. I couldn't remember if it was another.
It was a peddler like the guy was in One for the Angels. It was another street peddler.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was a potion or if it was an actual object that he gave him.
No, it was something to drink or something like that.
He drank the potion, and all of a sudden, he's able to shoot again. And eventually, a young gunslinger comes into town, played by a very young Doug McClure. And eventually, they have a showdown, but they both inadvertently kind of shoot their guns out of each other's hands, and they're both unable to shoot again. And so basically, it's one of those all's well that ends well episodes, and it's all due to the peddler that gave him the potion. And I know that Bob and Ken really dislike this episode, but I didn't really think it was that bad. You know, to me, as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, because I had read that one of the things that Rod Serling liked to do was that he was trying to make, in many of his stories, was make social commentary through works of fiction. And one of the things that I think he was trying to show here was basically he was making a statement about alcoholism. And at the beginning, you really do see Mr. Denton as a very unfortunate person, full of a lot of self-loathing, which I think in many cases that's what makes somebody drink. But you know, he ends up turning himself around with the help of this peddler. And was the potion really a real potion, or was it just something that made him think that he could be better? Who knows? But I didn't think it was that bad. I rated it good. You know, it wasn't anything that knocked my socks off, but I didn't think it was the worst thing I'd ever seen on TV.
You gave it a 3?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, why don't you read Lynn's email?
Okay, and she writes, Lynn did not particularly care for this. She says, it's not a favorite of mine. I had two main problems with it. First off, even when the woman played by Gene Cooper offered Denton a free drink, he still allowed himself to be degraded by singing that stupid song, How Dry I Am, for the town bullies. I couldn't understand that. Also, when he got shot in the hand at the end, the doctor simply wrapped a piece of cloth around Denton's hand. He obviously had a bullet in his hand. That's like putting a Band-Aid on a 6-inch white knife wound. Definitely not one of the better zones. I don't know that he was supposed to have been shot. I thought he was just grazed really badly in the hand. I didn't think he actually needed the bullet taken out. But, you know, that was my perspective on it. I also did enjoy seeing Martin Landau in this. This was very young Martin Landau, who we saw on Mission Impossible later. But he was one of the he was the main town bully, and that was definitely a different part for him. So go ahead, Bob. Tell us how...
All right, Ken, enough of this nonsense. Let's take it apart.
Well, for episode 3 in the series, my rating is my first 0, lousy, awful, disgusting. And if the Twilight Zone Marathon is on this July 4th weekend, and this episode happens to be one of them that's shown, I'm going to walk out of the room for 30 minutes and then wait for the next Twilight Zone to come on, because no desire to see it again. First of all, Rod Serling, I know it's his rookie season. You know, your first year, you're a rookie. So I'm going to give him a pass on this one and said, all right, you tanked. But if I was sending a memo to him as a fan, I would say, hey, Rod, you know, for the third episode, give us something better than this. And I would also ask Rod Serling, have you seen the movie Shane? That's how you do a Western. You build up the drama, and you have a famous gunfight at the end. You know, Shane and the hired gunslinger in the bar. If you have not seen that movie, you've got to see it. The drama, the music, the angles.
Yes, but he only had 30 minutes, Ken. Keep in mind. Didn't have that much time to tell this story.
All right, then, you know, do away with all the nonsense. I mean, Jeanine Cooper, the pretty girl, has nothing going on. Martin Landau is miscast. Doug McClure shows up at the end. For what reason? I have no idea.
Well, he's the gunslinger that wants to take him on.
But there's no drama. They look at each other, and they're inside a saloon. It would have been better if they're outside on the lonely, dusty road and, you know, make it interesting. I mean, they look at each other, bang, nothing happens, no blood. And then Al Denton, you know, this Dan Duryea?
Duryea, Dan Duryea.
He was awful.
Yeah, I never did like him.
He doesn't know how to act. I mean, he's reading the script. And I can just go on and on. Bob, help me out.
You also mentioned in your review another movie, always one of the favorites of mine, and that's High Noon. You only have to watch those two movies to see how to do this. Shane was on Turner Classic Movies just last week, and I watched it again. Obviously, this is ridiculous. First of all, it's too early in the series to be doing Western drama. That's the kind of thing you do when the series has been around a while and you want something offbeat. In other words, fans or people who are watching are used to one thing, and then all of a sudden they get a Western drama. Oh, this is really unusual. But it's the third one, so you're confusing me. I don't even know what it is. I'm only 12 years old, and now all of a sudden I'm watching a Western. I agree with everything you said. I think it's absolutely dreadful. But I want to ask another question while we still have time on this, and that is, would somebody please tell me why in the 50s and through the 60s, Westerns were all over TV. They were the main staple on TV at one time. Gunsmoke, Bonanza, all kinds of Westerns. And now there are absolutely none of them at all. Now, I went on the Internet to see, and there hasn't been a Western series on TV since The Virginian, which went off in the early 70s. And it's absolutely amazing. Did they pass a law or something? I mean, there's just not. I just don't understand it.
Maybe just people OD'd on them.
But Kitty, it's been over 30 years. It's been 30 years. There are people who weren't even alive back then. And there's nothing on TV at all. By the way, I want to mention something else. I didn't know this until about an hour ago, and I don't remember it, so I guess nobody else does. There was a Western series on TV, on network TV, around 64, 65, right after The Twilight Zone ended, called The Loner with Lloyd Bridges. Anybody remember that at all? You're all too young.
Yes.
You do remember it?
Yes, I remember it.
You know who wrote the story? Rod Serling.
Right. A couple of them, probably.
It only lasted a year. So, I mean, I don't remember. I don't know if I ever watched it, because I don't have any memory of it at all. Do you have any memory of it? Have you ever seen it at all in reruns or anything?
Just Hopscotch. I remember The Rifleman. Remember that one?
Yeah, but that had nothing to do with Rod Serling.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he adapted, I guess he adapted this story for The Twilight Zone, and then when the series went on, he came on with a series, and I can only hope that it was better than this. I agree with you. I think that this is just, it's misplaced. It just doesn't belong in there at all, and I certainly agree with what Lynn Carpenter said about that final scene there with the doctor comes over, and I guess it's Denton who gets shot in the hand, and he takes a rag or a handkerchief or something, and he looks at his hand, and he wraps it around it, and that's it. Who ever thought that you could get shot in the hand, and the cure was simply to wrap something around it? Oh, you'll be okay. I mean, there's no blood, nobody's screaming, there's no pain.
Well, how about the end scene, Bob, where they just kind of go on the lonely dirt road, and then
the scene fades? I don't know what it means. I have no idea what it means at all. And really, unlike in One for the Angels, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't the street peddler have really very little to do in this episode, doesn't he? Isn't he just the one at the beginning and at the end?
Right.
Yeah.
So,
in fact, he doesn't really say much at all.
Right. So, I mean, whereas at least in that second episode, he was a big part of the story, this guy's just there to give this... I've only seen it one time, and like Ken, I just can't stand to watch it again. I don't know, Kitty, can you tell me, why did he give him this potion? Was he just trying to help out? Did he roam the West and help out people who needed help? Was that ever explained? I guess not.
I kind of got that impression that he was, in fact, I almost got the impression that maybe he was supposed to be kind of like an angel that just kind of appeared when people needed him.
Well, you know, I agree with Ken. I think, isn't the opening scene, Ken, isn't the opening scene there where he gets thrown out in the street and they're pouring liquor on his face?
Yeah, and they start laughing and all that.
Exactly, and somehow, as soon as I saw that, I had a feeling I wasn't going to like this episode no matter what happened.
How about the girl? She did nothing.
Well, she's just there to be pretty, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Kitty said, I think in her review, later on she was part of a soap opera. Is that right, Kitty?
Yeah. Later on in the 70s, she was on the soap opera, The Young and the Restless.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she was a very, very pretty lady there in The Twilight Zone. And later on... on the soap opera, her character underwent plastic surgery because the actress in real life had plastic surgery, and she actually had the surgery on camera.
They did real plastic surgery on camera?
Yeah, she actually did that. I mean, I thought it was a very gutsy thing to do, and she really looked good after she had it done.
Well, I can only hope that her part in the soap opera was more fleshed out than the part in this.
Her part in the pseudo western. She was kind of a bad lady, but an interesting character nonetheless.
Well, Ken's right. She really didn't have anything to do here, and all I can say is if you're going to do a western, which I don't favor at all at this point in the series, at least do it right. And surely, I mean, all you got to do is go back. Shane is a good example, and High Noon. But of course, I understand. It's like you said. I mean, it's only a 25-minute story, so you don't have time to talk about the characters, where they came from, what they're doing, and all that. But even so, you need to give people something. And one of the things about The Twilight Zone that's important to me, and it may only be me, is that I can't really get into stories unless I can get on the side of the main character. There has to be somebody in there that I like. I'm either fearful for them, or I feel for them, or I understand what they're going through, or I can relate to it. But when the story starts with this drunk being thrown out of a bar, and he's groveling in the street for some liquor, I don't really have a whole lot of sympathy for him. So it starts out, and I'm not terribly impressed. And I think that hurt the whole thing right there. So, that's one of the problems with it. But I also wanted to mention, Ken, if you did that today in a series today, where you don't even get 13 weeks anymore to prove yourself, don't you think these two episodes that we're talking about tonight might just have sunk the entire series right away?
It's hard to tell. It depends on the audience feedback. Surely. There's no water cooler talk about this one, the next day at the office. I mean, what's there to talk about?
Well, you can't take this kind of chance. They don't give you any time today. That's all I know. All right, it's break time for us, and then we'll be back to take on another episode. That's a lot of fun. Dan?
Yikes.
Everyone, Susan McCrae, host of Getting to Know You. You know, Louis Prima, Keeley Smith, and Sam Butera and the Witnesses were known as the biggest act to hit Las Vegas in the 50s. Sam Butera's saxophone kept the Las Vegas Strip swinging for 50 years. My show next Tuesday is about Sam Butera, a man who came to help out his friend Louis Prima, and who started arranging all the music for the Louis Prima Band with Butera as his saxophone sidekick. Please join me when I pay tribute to the great saxophonist, singer, composer, arranger, and very funny man, Sam Butera, on the next Getting to Know You, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, on Sharavision Radio.
And that's coming up next on KSAV. Now, back to Talking Twilight Zone, and here's Bobby.
Thank you, Dan. A harried business executive finds out the hard way that it's true what they say, you can't go home again, even when you do. Gig Young, guest stars in episode number 5 of The Twilight Zone, Walking Distance, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Twilight Zone. In addition, I would like to point out that at our Yahoo group, The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, where we are in the process of reviewing all 156 episodes of the series, tomorrow, Wednesday, we will be posting our reviews and begin an extended 3-week discussion of what many people feel is not only perhaps the greatest Twilight Zone episode of the entire series, but perhaps one of the finest television dramas ever presented in the history of the medium. At least that's how I feel. It's called The Hitchhiker. It is available for viewing online at several websites. If you haven't seen it, go take a look at it and find out what TV used to be like before they completely ruined it. It all begins tomorrow at our group. Don't miss it. As well as a discussion of it right here on Talking Twilight Zone, probably in about 2 to 2.5 months. Also, beginning on this Thursday, as Ken has already pointed out, the Sci-Fi Channel and Basic Cable will do their usual 4th of July Twilight Zone Marathon. But this time, to their beginning with the, I believe it was the mid-80s remake of the series, They've got quite a few there. I know that I personally haven't seen most of them. So they're starting out with that, and then they'll get into the original series. There are many, many classics on there. If you know, a lot of people say that they would comment on our message board about them, but they don't have them, and they don't want to buy the DVD set, well, okay, then turn on the marathon over the holiday and tape it right off of there, and then you'll have it. The Hitchhiker will be on Saturday. I don't know whether Mr. Denton will be there or not. I can only pray that it isn't. But if it is, I'll be walking out of the room just like Ken is planning on going. Details about the marathon, when it's on, how to get there, where it is, and so forth and so on, can be found on the homepage at our discussion group. Okay, from the absolutely sublime of The Hitchhiker to the totally ridiculous, as Kitty gives her summary of the 16-millimeter shrine. Kitty?
Yeah, the 16-millimeter shrine. We see an aging actress in her fancy home watching movies of herself in her younger days and how she wishes to return to those younger days. Her agent comes to visit her and tells her to come to the studio to see, I think it was a producer, about a part in a movie. So she goes, and she finds out that the part they had in mind for her was playing somebody's mother. She went off the deep end because she just yelled, "I don't play mothers." And they, you know, basically he was very upfront. He told her that she's too old to be playing an ingenue, which was true. And so she storms out and says she will not take the part. She goes home, and she basically wants to just return to the old days. Her agent brings somebody who used to act with her, and so she's all excited to see him. But then he walks in the door, and he's an older man. She was expecting to see the young, dashing guy, but not the case. He got older, just like she did. And so she's actually kind of rude to him. You know, she finds out that he left the profession altogether, and he's now just an average businessman, and he's happy. But she's not. He ends up leaving, and she just wants to return to the old days. And that's precisely what she does. Eventually, she just wishes herself into one of her movies, where she gets to be with all of the people as they were when they were younger. But interestingly enough, I found myself wondering how happy she was going to be at the end of that, because she herself was not her younger self on the film. She looked the way she looked in the present. So I was thinking she's probably not going to be that happy once she looks in the mirror. And I have to admit, I gave this a 1 rating. I didn't particularly care for it. This woman was very self-centered. She reminded me of Norma Desmond in that awful play that I went to and I hated, called Sunset Boulevard. I'm sure there's people out there who disagree with me on that, but that play did nothing for me. But she was very self-centered, very mean, not wanting to face the facts that everybody gets older whether you want to or not. And just because you get older, there's still career opportunities out there if you're just willing to take them. And, you know, and to be rude to her old friend that came to visit her, I thought was completely uncalled for. And so I really felt no sympathy for this woman and her so-called problem. And so that is why I gave it a 1 rating. This is from Lynn. But Lynn had a different opinion from all of us. She says, "I actually liked this episode and thought Ida Lupino was great in her role as the aging former screen siren. I have to admit, though, that I pretty much predicted what the ending for this one would be about 10 minutes into the story. I couldn't see it ending any other way. She was too obsessed with her former life. However, Ida was great and made this episode very watchable. I wouldn't deny that Ida Lupino didn't do a good job. I thought she was fine as an actress. I just didn't, you know, I just felt no empathy for her character in the least. What do you think, Ken and Bob?
Well, Ken, in Ken's review, he wrote, quote, a second-grade student could write a better script. Where's the beef? I don't know, Ken. Where is it? I think a first-grade student wrote it.
It's a soap opera. You remember the 60s. You know, as the world turns, Days of Our Lives. What was the other one in the 60s? I forgot.
There was a bunch of them. There was
One Life to Live.
General Hospital that, you know, and there's Another World.
Yeah, there's a basic premise in a soap opera. It's very easy to do. Anybody could write it. You have one dysfunctional character. You get a second dysfunctional character. Add a third one. The third one's in love with the second one. And the second one is fighting over the first one. And then you go back and forth, and you have a soap opera. And you continue that for 50 years, and people are still watching the soap operas today. So in The Twilight Zone, you know, Rod Serling was influenced by what was going on, and he said, hey, I'll add my little soap opera, too. I'll get a girl. She just sits there in her lonely room, and she just watched movies, and, oh, maybe a little romance here and there. And then I'll just end it where she takes a white scarf, throws it up into the air, falls onto the ground, and then we find out that she went back into time, and that's the end, and Rod Serling has a closing line only in The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
And as a fan, I'm watching this, and I said, boy, I just wasted 29 minutes of my life. Bob?
Have you ever seen the movie Sunset Boulevard?
No,
I've
I didn't.
Never seen the movie, but I saw the musical play.
Well, then you know that this is basically a ripoff of that. Now, Sunset Boulevard is considered a classic movie. It drives me crazy. But the only compelling thing about that is to watch the very weird Gloria Swanson in it. It's something like that. I mean, she plays an aging movie queen there, too. So it reminded me immediately of that. It just bored me to death. I mean, I just don't care. I don't know who in the world, I don't know what kind of audience they were trying to grab, but this is not the episode that's going to grab anybody. Certainly at my age, I didn't have any idea what they were talking about. So I think it was a complete waste of time, and it's worthless. It's extremely pointless. Ida Lupino's in this, is that right?
Yes, she plays...
I would like to point out that this has nothing to do with The Twilight Zone, but since many people who listen to this show also listen to when we did The Talking Fugitive, that on Turner Classic Movies, I think it's either tomorrow or tomorrow night, or coming up soon, they're showing a movie called High Sierra, and that's with Ida Lupino in her very, very early days, and Humphrey Bogart. This is an outstanding movie, and it's very much like The Fugitive in that he plays a criminal on the run who goes up and hides in the mountains. I haven't seen it in years. If you've never seen it, I highly recommend it. If you're a fan of The Fugitive, you'll see a lot of similarities there. And Ida Lupino, before she became a director, was a very good actress, and she is extremely good in that movie. I wish I had checked to tell people exactly when it's on, but I'll post the date and the time on it at The Fugitive Group. Okay, so that's about it. We're just about out of time, so thank everybody. Thank you, Dan. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Okay, Dan, take it away.
Thank you very much, Bob, and thank you, group. And you are correct. Back in 2 brief weeks with more Talking Twilight Zone on Share a Vision Radio.